Hello and welcome to the ISIS Americas podcast for Friday, 27th of July, 2018. I'm your host, David Hayden, and joining me by phone today are two members of ISIS's fertilizers team, markets editor Annalise Little and senior editor Mark Milam. Hello to both of you.
Hi, David.
We are a little over half done with summer, with quite a bit going on. We've got some political topics to delve into, market commentary, and both of you just attended the Southwest Fertilizer Conference. Let's get a quick recap of the conference and go from there. Mark, start us off, if you will, with the conference and how urea ammonium nitrate markets are doing.
Okay, very good. Well, as has come to be expected, the Southwestern event was heavily attended this year. And we did survive the hot weather to come away with a great slate of 30 meetings altogether as a team, which included our manager and editor, Julia Meehan, for her first time at the event. But despite the robust attendance, it was commented often that in terms of activity, especially for nitrogen side, it was one of the slowest events in over a decade and gave rise over the time that we were there in San Antonio to a bearish sentiment. The main focus for me at Southwest was the nitrogen side, with urea, of course, a main topic, but especially the urea ammonia nitrate market, as UAN was coming off a resetting earlier in the month as the summer fill program was announced by CF ahead of the conference, which is a bit earlier than normal and certainly grabbed the lion's share of participants' attention. For the most part, the fill program has been viewed as being well-received, although the amount of tonnage actually moved varies depending on the outlet. But as of now, the market thinks the brief flurry is over and that expects UAN values to hold steady for the short term. For urea, the market remained in a low demand, high caution period at Southwest, with most people waiting on the Indian tender, which was the front of everyone's mind. There was thought that at best the tender, which was revealed earlier this week, would keep price levels supported, but was aired with the caution that once the momentum of the tender faded, that the U.S. could start to equally sag downward.
Annalise, any follow-up on the conference, and how are sulfur markets doing?
Yeah, so right before the conference, Mosaic and Nutrien settled their Q3 sulfur Tampa contracts at $121 per long ton. That's the highest price we've had in 30 months. So that was a talking point of the conference, but not a huge one, because it really didn't come as a surprise to anybody. A lot of the conference chatter was centered around upcoming and ongoing projects, most of them on the sulfuric acid side, a new ammonium sulfate plant in Illinois that's consuming a lot of acid, an in-situ recovery project that has recently been permitted, and an acid terminal that is going into California later on this year. On the sulfur side, North America remains really, really tight right now, kind of the status quo for the whole year so far. Western Canada in particular is really suffering. The most recent data out from the Alberta Energy Regulator shows that April's oil sands production is at its lowest point since June 2016. I suspect that's even lower in the more recent months, but the data hasn't been published for that yet. Suncor's Syncrude oil sands and sulfur facility will be down and reduced until September. That's really, really affecting things. That's a combination of an unplanned outage from a lightning strike and then a planned turnaround that they moved forward to come in tandem with the outage that was already happening. So that's not going to come all the way back up to full capacity until September. So the other thing that's affecting silver right now is that China's not really buying it. At this point, I'd say that's pretty related to extremely high stocks over at the Chinese ports already. They've got more than 1.56 million tons stockpiled over there, which is a lot higher than normal, a lot higher than the average from the last couple of years. In theory, China should still be buying, or at least have been buying throughout July since it's India's phosphate season, and they lift a huge amount of sulfur from China for that. But they are just not, and we're all a little mystified about why.
So just to clarify, China not buying sulfur isn't directly correlated to the U.S.-China trade war?
Not that we've really been able to pinpoint so far. The data from China Customs has had a bit of a problem the last couple months, so no one has the data more recent than March. But even in March, China had taken 25% less sulfur than March of 2017. And since China demand is a really big key driver of Vancouver spot prices on the sulfur side, a lack of China buying and consumption has really capped price for the last few months.
Regarding China, there's a lot going on in terms of the trade wars that's affecting crops. The U.S. Department of Agriculture recently announced $12 billion worth of relief for U.S. farmers to cover an estimated $11 billion in lost sales from the tariffs between the U.S. and China. Mark, can you give us a bit of insight on that?
Well, the immediate reaction by the farmer community has been rather positive, but there are some who think there's a clear signal that the administration is prepared for a long battle over tariffs. And others have highlighted that this was likely undertaken in part by the administration to garner political support for upcoming midterm elections, as farmers have lost some of their once fondness for the president. At the bottom line, the underlying concern to both the agricultural and crop input markets, especially fertilizers, is that the protraction of the trade dispute will only lead to further price drops for U.S. crops and reduce farmer income more significantly. Less cash, less they buy, especially on nutrients.
And also, between the U.S. and the European Union, there's been some movement. The EU and the U.S. agreed to pursue tariff-free trade, which means a lot for farmers in the U.S. since China has reduced soybean purchases, correct?
That is correct, and we'll have to see. It just happened, so the farmer market really hasn't had time to digest it, but, you know, we saw a little bit lift in the soybean future, so the market's looking for any positive news that it can find right now, especially as we're in the middle of the crop season for everyone. So we'll see how that pans out, but it was certainly positive that that deal was struck. Now everyone just hopes that we can resolve our issues with China.
And speaking of being in the middle of the season, what are market participants expecting in the coming weeks? First to you, Mark, and then Annalise.
Well, we'll have to see how a lot of this plays out. Right now, for my markets, we're in the low period of demand and buying. Refill periods for most of the major nutrients has already taken place. So we're going to kind of think that we'll see a slow August, slow into summer, and then that things will start to pick up a little bit more late Q3, Q4 as we get a little bit closer. And if these tariffs can get resolved and the farmers have a good harvest, then it'll bode well for the upcoming spring crop demand that we'll see beginning at the end of this year into next year.
Annalise?
Okay, we're not really expecting any big surprises or any huge dynamic movements on the sulfur side for North America. It's just going to be on the U.S. side, supply and production keeping up with demand from Brazil, and on the Vancouver side, trying to catch up inventories as well. A little less stress up there since there's not so much demand for that product. So expecting a decently smooth ride over the next few weeks for sulfur.
Thanks to both of you for the update.
Thank you.
Booyah.
And thanks for listening, everyone. As always, if you'd like more information on what's going on in the fertilizers markets or any of the markets we cover, be sure to visit isis.com. And be sure to tune in to the next podcast.